The 2-2 pitch. There's a drive deep right. Cubs win! Cubs win! On a grand slam by Hayward! And this ball's thrown.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play. Bryant, the Cubs win the World Series! Bryant makes the play! It's over! And the Cubs have finally won it all!
TGIF, and welcome to Fanatics Friday on the Mistaken Identity Podcast. Brought to you by Fanatics, the world's largest collection of officially licensed fan gear from all the leagues, teams, and players you love. Head on over to the show notes to gain access to the worldwide leader in licensed sports merchandise from all of your favorite teams, and be on the lookout for your chance to win some free items. Now, here are your hosts, Frank and David.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Mistaken Identity Podcast with David and Frank. For those of you that are watching this, you can see that that is definitely not David in the chair here next to me. That's because David is at work. And if you are a podcast member and you're watching these episodes, you're probably a little giddy right now because somebody who we never thought would be co-hosting with me is here today, and that is Jordan. Jordan, what's up?
Hello, guys.
Now, you have always been scared to co-host with me. I've been trying to get you to do it for a while. So what made you say yes, you're going to do it today?
I don't know. I was just like, I have nothing else to do. I have nothing to lose. Why not?
So you're not scared anymore?
I don't know. Yeah, you know, it's just like you got to ask me about five times, and then I'll convince myself sooner than later.
All right. So, you know, people know that David and I usually start out talking about some things that are going on. So, obviously, the elephant in the room, you want to tell people what happened to you today, Wrigley Field?
Well, today I won Associate of the Month for June, which was very shocking. At first, I thought I was in trouble. I was like, what did I say to somebody? Like, that they're going to take me to HR? Like, because it was the big boss calling me. So I was like, scared. But yeah, I was an employee of the month for June for the securities. That was exciting.
Yes. Of course, I knew in advance, but because we vote, so I knew in advance. But it was good to see because, you know, I won that in 2017. So the only difference is that you won it in June. I won it in April. Therefore, I'm still supreme because I'm first.
I didn't come back. See, what's up? You're not as good as me, though, Frank, because I won it the 1 month, the first month I came back. Okay. My first homestand was in June, and I won it in June.
Let the record show that even though I won Employee of the Month, I went on to win Employee of the Year that same year. So we'll see what happens. Yes. by the way, I thought I almost killed you today because, you know, you always ask, you know, what are we going to eat or whatever, and I had something I shouldn't be eating anyway, an Italian beef, the Buena beef. And the last time you had it, it made you sick. So today you're like, you know, I don't want to eat it because I got, you know, because I'm sick. And then you turn right around and say, yes, I do want to eat it. So I thought to myself, if I feed him and he dies and he wins the month, I'm the most hated person in this stadium today.
No, I need the peppers. I have to, like, just take the hot peppers off and then I'm all set.
And one other ironic thing today is that I didn't do this at all, but you were finally, actually, truly assigned to my area for the first time. Of course, that game ended up being 4 hours long.
It felt like 1 hour because we was doing so much. They was like, it's a 4-hour game. I was like, really? It was crazy. We were so busy in the bleachers.
Yeah, for those of you that are listening, we were I was the supervisor on bleachers today in the Cardinals series, so I was praying all throughout the game, but I'm here, so it worked out well. Now, let's move on a little bit to our guest today, who is here, who I actually knew of him before he knew of me, because I went out to Club 400, which we'll discuss because we're having a party there. But I went out to Club 400, and there was a painting in Stu's Stu is the owner of Club 400. There was a painting in his man cave. And I think it was a Chris Bryant, I think it was. And it was absolutely amazing. And I'm like, you know, who made this painting? And that's when he said Dan St. Clair. And he just happened to have some other paintings that were dropped off that day, one that he raffled. So I knew of Dan St. Clair before he even knew I was a person. So I want to give a big podcast welcome to our guest today, Dan St. Clair. How's it going, Dan?
It's going great, Frank. How are you doing, man?
Pretty good. And not only is it a big day for Jordan, but it's your birthday today.
It is my birthday today. We're top it off with a podcast here tonight, so it's all good.
Yes. Jordan wins an award. Today's your birthday. The Cubs win.
Great day today.
The Cubs.
Cubs get a win.
Game. Yeah. Yes. So winning all around. So that is great. Now, so let's get started a little bit. Now, I want to talk to you about the Cubs first. So tell me about why the Cubs? Why are you a fan of them? And you know, all your portraits are of the Cubs. Why the Cubs?
Well, I mean, I grew up in just about, you know, 90 miles west of Chicago. My whole family were Cub fans growing up. I still have memories of, you know, my dad had a AM radio on our porch, and Cubs games were on all the time. My brother was a huge Cubs fan. Our neighbor, who was an old guy, he was a huge Cubs fan too. So I just grew up around it. We had one game a week that we would get on local TV because we didn't have cable. So every Sunday afternoon during baseball season, it was a Cubs game. And so, and when we got cable, you know, a couple of years into it, it was, you know, on WGN Channel 9, it was, you know, Bozo Circus at noon, leadoff man at one, and Cubs game right after that. And so, you know, that was a team I grew up with and grew up loving, and still love them today.
Now, I was a huge fan of Bozo the Clown. I'm just curious if Jordan even know what Bozo is, Jordan, or watch the TV show.
I swear I heard of it.
Jordan, if you YouTube it, it's probably maybe the creepiest thing you've probably ever seen in your life.
I've never seen it then.
Yes, I do. I used to love the Bozo show on WGN with Bozo and Cookie and all. I used to love that. So what would you say, do you have a favorite Cub of all time, or a favorite team, or a favorite season?
Well, here's the thing. A favorite Cub of all time has to be Sandberg. I mean, my wife and I named our oldest son Ryan. So that's a pretty easy call for me right there, you know, is Sandberg for sure. So, you know, favorite season, honestly, even though it didn't end up that the way that we all want it to be, was the 84 season I'm doing the portrait of right now. You know, even though it ended up didn't end the way we all wanted it to end, that summer was so much fun because it came out of nowhere. I mean, the 83 team won, I think, 75, 76 games. And so there was some promise there because you had some, you know, young Sandberg that just won the rookie of the year and things like that. But the way 84 came together out of the clear blue sky was just, that was a magical time. And so sure would have liked seeing him play at least play in the World Series that year, but that, you know, that was so much fun. I was 19 years old, you know, at the time too. So kind of, you know, being able to go to Wrigley on my own a few times and, you know, driving in there, just, you know, a lot of fond memories for that season for sure.
Now, we work at Wrigley Field, so we sort of get paid to love it, even though we love it regardless. But I'm asking, curious to you, what are your thoughts about Wrigley Field?
I still remember the first time I walked in there when I was probably 11 years old, and I'd seen it on TV so many times, and I was just, I still remember the grass. I still remember seeing the scoreboard for the first time. You know, I think I was 11 years old. So in 1976, we saw the big red machine, Cincinnati Reds, who I just grew to hate because they just beat the Cubs up every time they played them. I think in 76, I think the Cubs beat them one time out of 16 games or something like that. You know, I still remember that game. I think there was four home runs the first two innings. I think it was Johnny Bench, George Foster, Dave Kingman, and Manny Trio. I remember my dad saying to me, it ain't always like this. You don't see this kind of action. So I think the Cubs end up getting beat like 9-3 that day. But just the, you know, just seeing it live for the first time, that's just burned in my memory. And so even as many years ago as it was right now. So just walking around the ballpark and being, that was the first time I was ever like down, you know, in that, but you know, in that area of Chicago. And it was just, I was just blown away. I was just, you know, absolutely blown away. Wanted to go there as much as I could. Just, you know, cemented me as a Cub fan for life that day.
Yes, yeah, so I'm going to talk about my first time at Wrigley, and then I'll let Jordan tell his first time. So I was 16, which I saw all the time when I first walked into Wrigley. But so I was not a Cubs fan, didn't even know anything about baseball at all whatsoever. The Cubs had a table at my high school, Lane Tech, down the street on Addison, and they were recruiting people to come work. Just for that summer. So I'm like, okay, it's a job, you know, why not? And so my first walking into the ballpark, you're on the concourse first. You see all this brick. And so it's just sort of normal to me. So, but then you take that stairway up to where the field is, and you see the grass, and you see the stadium, and you're like in the scoreboard, and you're like, you're hooked, like, in the moment.
There you go.
Because, you know, for a person that does not follow baseball or whatever, just to be walking into, like, whoa, like, this is amazing. And obviously, 16 then, 43 now, I'm still there. So it must have had some kind of effect on me. But, I'll never forget, you know, walking into there for the first time. What about you, Jordan? First time I read it.
See, mine was the total opposite. I was a Sox fan before. Because I honestly was just going with the color. I was like, black and gray go with everything. Throw some white in it, you know, it rocks. And I've been in their stadium. It was new. They just won a World Series not too long ago. So I was like, oh, I'm a Sox fan. But then Frank actually gave my mom some tickets before, like when the Cubs was just doing bad. They haven't won in a while, which before the World Series. So we ended up getting some tickets about, I want to say I was about 14, 15. And I went in there and I was like, yeah, this is not okay. This is, why is it like, I felt like it was old, but then like we kept going because we had like, I think we went like 4 or 5 times that season. We kept going and I eventually started working there. And I was like learning the history and I did a tour. I worked a tour. And so working a tour, I learned about the history actually of Wrigley Field. So I'm like, oh, that's what that is. So working there, you have training, and some of our training includes like learning about the ivy on the wall and different things like that. So I'm like, this makes so much more sense. And like you say, working at it really makes me more of a fan because the atmosphere at a Cubs game, it just makes you feel alive. Even working there, it's just like, it's great. I love it. It's a great atmosphere. And I've been to a lot of Sox games. And I would tell you, even when they win, I don't feel the same with the fireworks.
Okay. So Dan, where were you and what were you doing the moment the Cubs won the World Series?
Sitting in my living room, I'm right in the spot that I sat in for every ball game in the same chair. Kind of superstitious that way. Broke down and cried, you know, for sure. I've been waiting for my baseball life. You know, that was a dream to come through. And just sitting there, just even reflecting back on these two things we talked about. First time I was at Wrigley Field and just missing it in 84 and some of the other things that, you know, they're just close and, you know, not just going to take those last steps to, you know, get over the hump. It's just a wave of emotion, just a wave of emotion that night, but sitting in my living room with my wife and my son and sweating it out, you know, for, you know, going in there, you know, from the 8th, 9th, 10th inning. But that's usually where I sit, sitting watching. If I'm sitting watching games, it's usually right there. I'm a big radio guy though, too. And so, because, you know, when I'm painting, I'll have a radio on downstairs, or if I'm working in the garage or something like that, doing some of the camera, the palette art and stuff that I do in the garage. Big radio guy too, so.
Now, David makes fun of me because when the Cubs tied the game, I turned the TV off. I was already having a heart problem watching that show, you know, watching the first couple of innings. So when the Cubs tied it up, when the game got tied up, I turned the TV off. And I did not know the Cubs won. And I live down the street from Wrigley Field. I did not know the Cubs won until I saw the sirens and the horns and things outside. And I turned the TV on. Oh, we won the World Series. So people make fun of me. But my heart was beating out of my chest that entire game. I just could not take that game 7. I couldn't take it.
You know, that was me for game 5. That was me for game 5. When they were down 3-1, And I was not a wreck all day long, but it was like, is this going to be it? And the Indians are going to celebrate in Wrigley Field and that sort of thing. I was doing the same thing. I turned the TV off. I'd walk away, I'd go do something and come back and check it. And it was 2-1 through like the whole game. And so, but yeah, I barely watched that game. And so, and I didn't watch the ninth inning. I did not watch the ninth inning because I was afraid that, if I turn it on, this has been successful all night, turn on the game on the ninth inning, Indians will put six on the board or something like that. Part of that was I was at game six in 2003. I was at Wrigley Field for game six in 2003 when they gave up 8 in the 8th when they were up 3-0. And so I lived that firsthand and I kept having flashbacks to that. So I was like, no, this is working. I'm not watching. They're cruising along. And so didn't watch much of that game. Definitely didn't watch, I think, even the 8th and 9th inning that night.
I'm not even a superstition. I don't believe in superstitions at all. But for some reason, I felt if I turned the TV off, they'd win. So I think everybody was caught up in the moment because I don't even believe in those kind of things. But that day I did, like, turn the TV off, they'll win. Leave the TV on, they're going to lose. So
that's what I've done it before. I've done it before in other sports. When I was a kid, I was a huge Dr. J Philadelphia 76er fan. They played Boston in the Boston Garden in game 7 a couple times. I didn't watch any of it. And I remember the year before they were up 3-1 and got to game 7 and lost by a bucket. They went to game 7 in the Garden the next year. I didn't even turn it on and they blew them out by like 15. So it kind of stuck right there. So I apply it now to my true love, the Chicago Cubs.
I should have done that. I only did that for the Bulls when we had Derrick Rose. I was like, I'm watching it. Hopefully we can go somewhere. Maybe I should have just turned it off and we would have won something.
I hear you. I hear you, Jordan.
Now, so I earlier brought up how I had heard about you before, so I want to go through that. So how did you become familiar with Stu and Club 400?
Well, the Bryant painting that's an interesting story because I had actually sold that painting to a collector he was actually out of New York. And he wasn't a collector. He was a dealer is what he was. And I always felt bad about that. Just didn't have a good feeling about that at all. That painting felt like the dog that got out of the yard that I never saw again kind of thing. So this would have been 2016. And I believe it was 2 years later, I was doing a Javi Baez portrait and I posted some pictures on Facebook and some other things. And a friend of Stu's sent him the photo that I was friends with he saw on Facebook and said, "Hey, isn't this the painting that you have in your basement?" And so Stu called me and he said, "I bought this painting from a guy in Chicago who got it from somebody else." The painting had changed hands at least 3 times after I had sold it. And it ended up with Stu and made the connection through his friend on Facebook, said, "I think this is the same guy that painted this painting, that the Bryant that you have." And so he messaged me on Facebook, sent me a picture of the painting and said, "Did you do this painting as well?" And it was almost like this overwhelming feeling of, like I said, like the dog that all of a sudden shows up that you hadn't seen for forever, kind of thing, that, wandered back home. So I immediately called him and we hit it off, famously. And we talked for over an hour that night about the Cubs and, of course, portraits and, the events that Stu has at his house. I was doing the Baez painting just because I like Javi Baez. I didn't realize that he was having Javi Baez for an event at his home within like 30 days. And so I ended up finishing that portrait, donating at the Club 400 for that, for particular benefit. Stu and I have been great friends ever since. I took that painting over about a week before the benefit, walked around. It's kind of on the back side of his room downstairs, saw that Bryant painting and realized that it found his way home. And I couldn't believe it. I was seeing it. So it was one of those just odd coincidence kind of things that, came full circle. And just made me feel a lot better. It almost made me feel like it was how it was supposed to happen, even though for about a couple years before that, every time I thought about that painting, I just felt lousy about it because it was just a wrong person to sell it to begin with, but it somehow ended up in the right hands. And so with Stu McVicker and Club 400.
Yes, I've seen it. It fits that room perfectly. And I can't wait to show people on the 18th when we get there. So let's talk about all the way in the beginning and how you got into love of painting. Let's talk about that. How did this all start?
Well, when I was a kid, you know, I was a big baseball card, football card collector. So there was Osco Jewel that was in our neighborhood. So we got allowance back when I was a kid. I think we got $2 a week or something like that. So you could go buy like four, actually, believe it or not, you go buy four packs of football cards or baseball cards. And that week's issue of Sports Illustrated. So I would actually, you know, of course, read the magazine, look at the cards, but then I was to start sketching things on notebook paper. And just that's how the art started anyways. So just, you know, doing that. I remember the first time my dad, and I think it was probably still at Osco, bought me an actual sketch pad and I could actually start drawing on something paper that wasn't lined. So I just kept doing that. And really it was seeing pictures on football cards or baseball cards or pictures in Sports Illustrated. And just started sketching those in sketchbooks. I didn't pick up a paintbrush, you know, seriously until, I don't know, it's probably in middle school, probably, you know, 12 or 13 or something like that. And it was like a hand in a glove. I loved it. Probably because it was easier than sketching something. You know, even today I can sketch things. In fact, all these start out as sketches, you know, on the canvas, but it's all really rough. The painting side, it was something that I picked up on in an early age. You know, I was fortunate enough to have teachers back then that recognized how much I loved it and they really encouraged me to stick with it. And so, you know, that's from its simple beginnings was, you know, Sports Illustrated magazines and, you know, notebook paper, lined notebook paper and, you know, baseball cards that I just recreate the pictures that I saw.
It's Friday then. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of Headlines and Hot Takes, brought to you by Lids.com. Now, I've had a little time to cool down since I last recorded that last segment, and luckily in between we've had some promising news about the future of both ball clubs in Chicago, thanks to the MLB draft. In very Pittsburgh Pirates fashion, the Pirates went against the grain a bit and took catching prospect Henry Davis with the number one overall pick. Now, don't get me wrong, this guy projects to be a stud, and he was rumored to be a top five pick by most prognosticators anyway, but it's safe to say that taking him with the first pick was at least a little bit of a surprise to just about everybody outside of Pittsburgh's front office. A few more surprises were in store before the Cubs and Sox would test their luck. Marcelo Mayer, a shortstop at the very top of most mock drafts, slid to the Red Sox with the number four pick, and half of Vanderbilt's two-headed pitching monster nearly slipped out of the top 10 entirely, with Kumar Rocker finally finding a home with the New York Mets. Another player rumored to have a chance at the top spot, prep shortstop Khalil Watson, finally left the board as a Miami Marlin with the 16th pick, making that one of the biggest steals of the evening. And selfishly, now that I'm living in Miami, I'm more than happy to have a first-hand look at how this amazing draft haul will benefit the Marlins' future. Between Watson, fellow first-rounder Joe Mack, who's a catcher, and the absolutely ridiculous pitching the Marlins have in the pipeline, they're setting themselves up for quite the come-up in the near future. Now to the Cubs and Sox. They went back-to-back near the end of the first round, but both teams have gotten strong reviews from their respective picks, even though they took drastically different approaches. The Cubs went with one of the most polished college starting pitchers available, taking lefty Jordan Wicks out of Kansas State with the 21st pick. Internally, the front office had Wicks on the shortlist of best available talent in the draft, so it was a no-brainer to take him where they did. Wicks, who's still only 21 years old, has added some velocity and improved his strikeout numbers throughout his college career, but his calling card is a low 80s changeup that's already considered to be a viable weapon at the MLB level. He won't blow you away with triple digits, but his pitch mix, high IQ, and his repeatable delivery can certainly set him up to be a middle to top of the rotation arm. And if that repertoire is ringing any bells, you might already be thinking Kyle Hendricks, maybe from the left side, but we'll see. He clearly fills a need, as the Cubs haven't had the best track record of developing homegrown arms, and he's closer to making the jump to the majors than pretty much any high school arm so far, meaning we could get a glimpse of what Wicks has to offer as soon as the fall of 2022, if everything happens to go right.
As for the Southsiders, they went with another highly touted high school shortstop, taking Indiana native Colson Montgomery with the 22nd pick. At 6'4", he'll be one of the larger shortstops in the game, but his footwork and his reads on balls off the bat give the impression that he could stick at that spot defensively, even as he adds weight to his frame. Montgomery also has a lot of pop in his bat that he's yet to unlock, which is certainly something the White Sox would look to develop as he works his way through the minors. But the catch-22 of drafting a player out of high school is that that player may very well decide to go to college to play instead of immediately entering pro ball. Montgomery has already verbally committed to the University of Indiana, so the Sox have to hope that whatever money they offered him will be enough to draw him away from that commitment. To put it in perspective, Chris Bryant was drafted by the Toronto Blue Jays before the Cubs out of high school, but he decided to stick with his commitment to the University of San Diego instead, and as a result, he blossomed into a no-doubt top-flight talent in college, which he parlayed into a much bigger payday when he got drafted by the Cubs. So as enticing as it may seem for a high schooler to get an offer to play pro ball right away, Montgomery will have a lot of high-level decisions to make about his future in pretty short order. I know everyone dreams about being a pro ball player, but imagine being 19 and having to make these kinds of decisions. I wish him the best of luck, whether that means he'll be rocking crimson on his jersey next year or black pinstripes. The draft had a different flavor this year, as it was lumped in with the larger schedule of All-Star festivities that spread across the week. Cubs fans got another welcome break from reality when we got to watch top prospect Brennan Davis launch a pair of home runs on his way to MVP honors in the Futures game. With the big club on the brink of a massive overhaul, it's always nice to see glimpses of what we can look forward to in the future. Davis, along with catching prospect Miguel Amaya, might actually have a shot to impress us as soon as rosters expand later this fall. As for the current squad, both Cubs representatives got a chance to strut their stuff at Coors Field during the All-Star game itself. Craig Kimbrell got a pair of outs sandwiched around a double by Adelis Garcia, and Chris Bryant nearly tied the game in the late innings with the bases loaded. Jared Walsh, who has never played an inning of left field in the majors, of course, made a spectacular sliding catch to preserve the lead for the American League as they walked away with their eighth consecutive All-Star Game victory. The White Sox sent four players to Denver, but we only got to see two and a half of them, or thereabouts. Tim Anderson played two innings on defense and was stranded on deck prior to making a plate appearance. Carlos Rodon didn't enter the game on the mound either, but his staff mates Lance Lynn and the always colorful Liam Hendricks were front and center for their respective innings of work. Lynn relieved the comic book superhero known as Shohei Ohtani with a scoreless second inning of work, and Hendricks committed a number of FCC violations as he locked down the save for the American League. Hendricks was wearing a microphone and an earpiece, but according to him, he wasn't able to hear anything coming out of the earpiece, and he just figured the whole system malfunctioned, so he let it rip. And I don't know what Fox was expecting, but I'd imagine putting a live mic on super competitive athletes while they're at work is not the best way to keep your broadcast family friendly, but hey, that's just me. We'll take a break from dissecting Cubs and Sox trade rumors and hit the hardwood before we go. The Milwaukee Bucks took both games on their home floor to tie the NBA Finals with the Phoenix Suns at two games apiece. As much as I dislike the marketing angle behind the Deer District and the Cream City, I can't deny the impact that Bucks fans have had on this series. There were moments in both games in Milwaukee where the Bucks looked pretty dead in the water, especially in Game 4, and the team was able to rally back from a deficit on both occasions to win. I know the players are the ones doing the actual work, but there's something to be said about the atmosphere that's created by the fan base, and with two franchises that are starred for titles, it's very easy not only to see the enthusiasm be front and center in this series, but also the desperation. I wouldn't be surprised in the least if the winner of every game was the team that had home court advantage. And that's not an incredibly hot take since we've seen more than half the series go by with this being the case, but outside of the fan base creating a very realistic advantage, we've seen some key contributors on both sides go quiet away from their home floor. During the first two games, Chris Middleton and Jrue Holiday were basically missing in action, only to give virtuoso performances when the series shifted to Milwaukee. Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton were massive in the Suns' first two wins, but both got into early foul trouble on the road, and that severely restricted their impact. Chris Paul also made a very uncharacteristic error that helped steal things for the Bucks in Game 4 in Milwaukee. The only person that seems to be exempt from this rule is Giannis, and considering he also appears to be exempt from the laws of physics, that doesn't really surprise me. I'm still pulling for the Suns to take the title, but if these last few games showed us anything, it's that the Bucks simply won't roll over and give this series away. Alright, that'll just about do it for this edition of Headlines and Hot Takes, brought to you by Lids.com, the number one destination for hats, gear, and everything that moves you. Check the show notes for our latest hat giveaway. You know, they say variety is the spice of life. I mean, you could wear the same Cubs logo as everyone else, or Or you could enter for a chance to win an alternate logo Elements 5950 fitted hat from New Era and truly stand out. This hat features a stylized alternate Chicago Cubs logo embroidered on the crown so you can show off your team spirit in unique fashion. And if you're not a Cubs fan, rest easy. This hat comes in any MLB team. So enter for a chance to win, shop the store for this item, and much, much more. And I'll catch you all next time. And now, back to the show.
Now you do pictures and flags, correct?
Well, yeah, I've got the portrait here. I can lean over here. This is a wooden flag I've done. I do frame pallet art as well. And it literally is, when I say it's pallet art, it's pallets that I'll bust up in my garage and put back together and paint images on them. You know, mostly Cubs. In fact, nearly, that's probably 90% of what I've done for the last 5 or 6 years, you know, out of my garage, as far as pallet art goes, is, you know, the Chicago Cubs. And so, but yeah, so I've got my studio in the basement where I paint the portraits, and I got my garage where I have the workshop and, you know, set up and, you know, do the pallet art as well.
So tell us about the photo that we have right there behind you.
Yeah, this is 1984 portrait that I'm working on right now. I've got a few miles to go on this one, but we've, 1984 kind of, you know, almost mirrors the 2015 team in some ways, because you had Sandberg and Sutcliffe that were MVP and Cy Young. I'm sorry, 2016 team, when you had Arrieta and, actually 2015 was Arrieta, was rookie of the year, and Cy Young with Arrieta and Bryant. And so, but like I mentioned before, that 1984 summer, That was so much fun, and I wish they would have played the Tigers in the World Series. I think I probably would have beat them. But it just brought us just so many memories, so much fun that we had that summer. You know, just because it didn't end well doesn't mean it wasn't fun for 5 months. So I'm trying to capture that. And with the players that I really enjoyed and admire, certainly, you know, Sutcliffe coming over in that trade, you know, Sandberg becoming the superstar that he was, Gary Matthews, is on the portrait. You know, he came over a trade from the Phillies about a week before the season started. You know, Lee Smith, the big closer, and Leon Durham, who I always thought was kind of an underrated guy for the Cubs. Always enjoyed watching him play. I thought he was a solid ball player. But, you know, we're going to add Jody Davis to this one, too. I thought he was a big part of the team. And I like to put some images of Wrigley Field, you know, as far as the background goes. I do that in all my portraits. So I paint edge to edge in the portraits, and I actually paint the outside edges as well. And so, you know, add some smaller images, but something that's recognizable from either Wrigley Field or, you know, even something like a ticket stub or something like that on there too. I just get the ideas from things that I've enjoyed, and watching the Cubs over my lifetime. And, just kind of take it from there. It's kind of free flows. I don't really have a plan when I do these things. I have an idea, but it's really something that just kind of flows out. No real game plan in mind, but, just kind of let it roll.
Well, quick question. What do you think is your favorite cut piece you have done?
Oh, you know, that Bryant, the Bryant portrait that we've talked about, that was one to me that I look at, and that was why it was so important for me. I shouldn't say important for me, that I'm just thankful that I was able to see it again. That was the first one that I really felt like it really took it up a notch as far as the background and the details. You know, that one's got, you know, Wrigley Field bleacher fans, you know, catching a home run ball, you know, in it. It's got, you know, Bricks and Ivy in there with the 368, you know, on the wall too. Wrigley Field, the marquee out in the front. You know, that was one that really felt like I turned a corner. Even though I've done this for a long time, you know, it's interesting to see, you know, I've got paintings I've done 10 years ago, and I look at them, and even today I go, that could be a lot better. You know, I've improved, I guess, is the thing. And, you know, how do you get better at anything? You just keep doing it. But I'd have to say that Chris Bryant one is the one that's an absolute favorite one, because it really kind of, I look at it and it kind of signaled a turning point where I really was kicking it up a notch.
Chris Bryant is a must to see then.
That's a good one. That's a good one for sure.
It's good. That question was good. That question is actually on my list. So that's good to see that you're settling in, Jordan, with this question, because that was on my list. But Dan, so walk us through the painting that's behind you, and those of you that are have the podcast membership, you're actually watching this. But that painting behind you, so what's the process like? Is Sandberg first, or because there's 1, 2, 3, 4, there are 5 players there. So
yep.
Walk me through a process using that as an example, if you can.
Sure, absolutely. The thing of it is, when you're in school and you're doing you're doing some basic things, and you kind of feel like you're held back because you've been drawing this player or that player or whatever else, and you got a teacher that'll just throw a bunch of stuff in the middle of the floor and say, paint this, draw this, that sort of thing, a chair with just some junk on it kind of thing. That's the skill building stuff. And what you learn through doing that is any painting, whether it's something like this or it's a landscape, it's you work left to right and back to front. The only thing I deviate from that is when I'm doing the human figure, I do the face first. Just because if it don't look like them, that's the payoff, right? I mean, if you're standing there explaining, oh, it's this guy, it's supposed to look, this is supposed to be this guy and it doesn't really look like him, what's the point? And so, the first one here that I did was, the background guys were first, on this. The Sutcliffes and, the Sandbergs, they were the two kind of the key guys, but then, I've kind of built in the background guys behind them, but working, like I said, that left to right, back to front. And even within each guy, you still have that concept where you work left to right, back to front. So, the jersey behind them will be first, their arms will be out, second. Even with the hands and a bat, you're going to paint the bat first because he's holding it, and then the hands go over the top of that. And so it's pretty simple stuff. It's actually Jordan's not going to know this guy. Maybe he will because he's kind of a caricature. Bob Ross, that used to paint on PBS. My friends thought I was nuts because I would sit and watch this guy paint, but I learned so much from him because his techniques are perfect. But the one thing that he always emphasized was left to right, back to front. So it just makes it easier. You don't have to retrace your steps so much that way. But as far as the picking the people, that go into it, it's really based on the memories and, trying to tell a story, is what I'm trying to do. Cause like I said, you got a Cy Young Award winner that came over midseason in Sutcliffe. You got an MVP that was, rookie of the year in Sandberg and was a budding superstar, just blew up that year. Like I said, Durham was one of my personal favorites, so was Jody Davis. Gary Matthews was a guy when he was the Phillies, I didn't like him. I just didn't flat out like the guy. And when the Cubs traded for him, I was like, oh my gosh, what are we doing here? Dallas Green is, just reaching back into his Philly roots and pulling this guy off the scrap heap kind of thing. And he hit an MVP by today's statistical measurement. He would have been the MVP. I mean, he had 150 hits. He scored 100 runs. He walked 100 times. So by the end of April, I was a huge Gary Matthews fan. So it kind of taught me, it was like, you can recognize a really good ball player if you just, kind of look beyond your nose, every now and then and realize this guy can really play the game, and be happy he's on your team. So, that's why Gary Matthews is in there as a guy that I, when they got him at the end of March, I was like, oh my gosh. Like I said, by the end of April, I was a big Gary Matthews fan. And so it's kind of things like that, come into my mind when I'm coming, trying to decide, who's going to be in a portrait and what I'm going to add to it. So these are actually, even though it's more work, these are actually easier to do than to pick one guy and build a portrait around him. Just because it's multiple, double images, the same guy, it gets a little bit tricky. It can be, kind of avoid the redundancy kind of thing. These are a little bit more difficult, a little more time consuming, but a lot more fun for me to do.
And so the majority of our audience are Cubs staff and there's some Cubs fans as well. But I got some news to announce to some of them, and that is that you're actually going to be at our 2021 Cubs Supervisor Ultimate Experience and Barbecue in July. My first time saying that to them so that they can hear that. What type of things will you be having on display or offering there? I've told some of them to have bring their custom ideas to you so that you can work out, what they want to get. But what are some things that they'll be able to see from you on July 18th?
Well, we're going to have the portrait finished, and fingers crossed, I'll have some prints available of the portrait. We'll bring a few flags along. We'll do some frame palette art, which is, you know, really, you know, big Cub logo type of thing, either, you know, something like this or the classic Cub logo or a combination of both. You know, some straight on palette art where it's just literally the, you know, the slats of the palette, you know, with some painted, some more rustic pieces like that. So we'll have a, you know, trying to have a variety of things. I'll be doing a lot of work between now and July 17th before it gets packed up on the 18th and heads over to Crystal Lake for sure. So, but we'll have, you know, something for everybody. And I always enjoy talking to people and they'll say, have you ever thought about doing something like this? And, you know, that's always fun for me to interact and have people bounce some ideas off me and, you know, what do you think of this? Or could you do something like that? And it usually ends up being a really, really good project that I get excited about. And so, but we'll have the original portrait. We'll have prints too. I've got some prints available of the previous portrait of the Cubs Hall of Famers, which was Ron Santo and Ernie Banks and Fergie Jenkins and Billy Williams that, you know, I did back in April. So we'll have some of those as well too. So going to bring a lot of things for some people, you know, people to look at and people to check out. I'm very, very much looking forward to it. If you've never been to Club 400, you know, it's an experience all onto itself. I mean, it's absolutely overwhelming to walk in there and see everything that Stu's got. I that's another one. The first time I walked in there, I couldn't believe it because I've seen people that have their man caves. This is the man cave on steroids. And so it's awesome.
You take custom orders so people can make a custom order. And I've already told you that my favorite player is Jason Hayward. So I expect to be placing an order at some point. But if people wanted to contact you for more information or to get some custom order or to buy things that you already have available, where can they find you? Where can they see your stuff?
Easiest way, the best way and the easiest way to see everything, quite frankly, is on Facebook. And so just Dan St. Clair on Facebook or Gridiron Sports Art on Facebook. And I get messages all the time where people just, you know, direct contact and then I'll, you know, swap cell phones with them and we'll take it from there.
Okay. Now I am curious as to if you do paintings other than the Cubs. Like if somebody came and said, I'm a huge Tim Anderson of the White Sox fan. I mean, you know, sure. I got a new child and I want to do a family, like portrait. Yep. What are the options?
Well, just last winter from a different team, you know, same sport, different team. I had a guy contact me, from California that he, growing up, he was a huge Dodgers fan. And he wanted something to remember that his family used to go watch Don Drysdale pitch every year and see Willie Mays with the Giants. So it was a Dodgers Giants, Dodger Stadium kind of memory piece for him. So, you know, that was a lot of fun too, you know, not being a big Dodger or Giants guy, but, you know, certainly having a lot of respect for, you know, players back in the 60s. That was really cool to do. I love that. Then the one right after that, actually, I've got a friend that he's a race car driver at kind of a smaller circuit around here, and he actually had me paint his Corvette that's got the, you know, all the racing with the numbers on it and everything else with his family dog sitting in front of it. So I've, you know, I've done that too, but I've done some family things for people too. It's always I always consider it to be an honor for somebody to approach me, you know, with something that's personal, that's that personal for them. You know, I take that pretty seriously. And like I said, consider that a big honor and you'll love doing things like that too.
Okay. All right. So I am, I can't wait until the 18th for many, many reasons. I've been to Club 400 twice, but, other people have no idea what they're getting into. Not to mention, you know, you will be there with, your work. So I think it's going to be a really fun and exciting time on the 18th of July. And I'm glad that you not only agreed to the podcast, but at the last minute agreed to show up to the event.
Absolutely. And what, you know, listen, we'll do a couple things too. I'll bring a couple things that we can raffle off and give away too. You know, absolutely. Always happy to do that. Cause that's a lot of fun, you know, for people to come and a lot of excitement too. So, and I enjoy doing that sort of thing. You know, the giving side of it is a big deal for me too. this is, it's like, you know, the more you give, the more you receive, and it just makes you feel good too. So I'm really looking forward to it, Frank. I appreciate you asking me, and I can't wait for the 18th to get here. Got a lot of ground to cover between now and the 18th for sure to get a lot of things ready, but I'll get it done. I always manage to pull it together.
Yeah, it's gonna be cool to see how it is now. Because to me, I don't know about Jordan, but to me, it looks done. So it's just from
I was gonna say it's like, I don't know what's your favorite piece, but that looks pretty good. Like, so I can't.
It is, guys. You know, just go on the Facebook page and check out the Hall of Famers one, and you can see I like to culminate it with a progression of the portrait, you know, where it starts from, you know, that first photo all the way on through, and it's usually, it could be as many as 30, 40 photos. But you'll see when you get into the detail. I mean, I got to put the bricks, I got to put the ivy on here. I mean, there will not be an inch of unpainted space when I'm done with this thing. And so I got a lot of hours and some late nights coming up here. So, but that's okay. That's okay.
Talented. Very, very talented.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. And so it's fun to share it too. It's fun to share, you know, especially with Cub fans and baseball fans, you know, it really makes my day just to get to hang out with cool people like this. So I'm really looking forward.
And since you do self-portraits, Jordan just graduated from college this year. I might surprise him and get a portrait done for him, for himself, for graduation. Cool. Might do that. But
Congratulations, Jordan. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Now,
I'll hang it up in here for sure.
I think I might do that. But we got one piece of business we got to take care of. And we get free Cubs tickets out for the summer games, tours, concerts. So, Dan, I need you to pick a number. How many do we have here today? Between 1 and 32.
I'll say 23.
23 is, she's a security associate, Dorothy Miyazaki. We've got some Wrigley Field tour tickets for you. I think you know Dorothy, Jordan. So Dorothy, you have 10 days to contact us to get the tickets that you won. And that's exciting that we can do that. And thanks, Dan, for picking that number. And happy birthday to you, by the way, Dan.
That's cool. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. This has been a great way to top off a really cool birthday. So this is awesome.
And Jordan, thank you. Even, you know, you stepped into my shadow today and trying to surpass me with your awards. But now I got to win another award just to keep some distance in between us. But it wasn't that bad today. Hook hosting, was it, Jordan?
No, it wasn't that bad. It's not a competition, Frank, you know.
Oh, yes, it is. Oh, yes, it is.
It's always competition, Jordan. It's always competition.
I'm the Leo. Like,
always keep that attitude, man. Always keep that attitude. Take it easy and on us old guys, though.
Yeah. I'm 43, and you're what? What are you, 21? What are you?
21, about to be 22.
So I got to make sure I'm one step ahead at all times. Yes. All right. So thank you both very much. And I definitely want to thank all of you for listening to this episode of Mistaken Identity Podcast. If you're not a podcast subscriber, I'm sorry, membership holder, you can get it for starting at $1. You'll get to watch all of these episodes as opposed to being only able to listen to them. Not to mention, there is some behind the scenes content. Jordan and I have done some other hilarious stuff together. I'm trying to convince him to do his own little podcast interviews as well. But that's,
do it.
Yes, do it. Patreon.com/Mistaken Identity Podcast. Thank you all very much, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Hey everybody, Joe Flaherty here with the Mistaken Identity Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this week's episode. We want to thank you for your continued support. We also want to extend a heartfelt thank you to those of you who have written reviews, dropped some likes, and shared our shows, as that has allowed us to grow beyond any of our expectations. As a matter of fact, we're excited to announce a new way for our loyal listeners to enhance their experience even more with our new membership feature. All you have to do is jump in the show notes and follow the link to our Patreon page, where you can find access to a whole bunch of extra goodies for as little as $3 a month. You'll be given access to exclusive content, merchandise, behind-the-scenes video, early access to episodes, the ability to make special requests for guests, and much, much more. Now, if that sounds like something that interests you, head on over to Patreon and search Mistaken Identity Podcast, or simply follow the link in our show notes to join the likes of Nancy Sullivan, Alice Daniels, and Kathy Chester at the rookie level, all the way on up to the Hall of Fame level with longtime listeners Kathy Wheatley and Kathy Grossman. As always, we can't leave without our disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely our own, and we do not speak for or on behalf of the Chicago Cubs or any other organization. Stay safe, and we'll catch you next time.